Jackson to the end zone. Touchdown, Texas Tech.
Ezukama for the touchdown.
Hand off to Marcus Fields down the sideline. Touchdown, Red Raiders.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Air Raid Podcast presented by Viva the Matadors. You are on once again with your boy, I'll be sure. And back again, like he never left, we have Jeremy Gillen on with us. What's up, Jeremy?
What is up, Albie? Feels good to be in, well, feels good to win one.
Finally win one, right? And we also have my right-hand man, Dylan Smythe, with me. What's going on, Dill?
Got the dub, and in celebration, we have to sing Almost Heaven. West Texas, Paladuro, Llano Estacado. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, Henry Columbia.
Country roads, take me home to the place
where I belong.
Lubbock, Texas. That's all the words that I know. Play I don't know nothing else.
Play us out.
But we won the John Denver Bowl. Yeah.
If only they knew what it took to put that together.
Oh my God. That's why we host a podcast and we haven't started our own band because we're awful. But you know who's not awful or who wasn't awful? The Texas Tech Red Raiders Saturday afternoon as they beat the West Virginia Mountaineers 34-27, and we are the winners of the John Denver Bowl, which means we can sing Country Roads as much as we want for the next 365 days. How are y'all feeling, Dylan? You go first.
Man, I was just very non-optimistic about this team in general, this game in general, and wow, did Matt Wells and company really flip the narrative this week with a big win over West Virginia?
I'm feeling like Dylan. This having the quarterback Saturday felt just different when I woke up and I thought, you know, I have no expectations for defeat today, and all the optimism in the world. It was like having a new season with Columbia under center. Just like I had no expectations, all the hype, all of the excitement, and it paid off. It really did. Kept us in the game. And our defense saved the day, but like because they were rested, and we'll get into that. But it was just a good, satisfying game that we did not lose on the last drive.
Yeah, I mean, it's me and Dylan both predicted Texas Tech to lose. We didn't have a lot of faith. Definitely thought Tech was going to go ahead and lay another egg. But I will say, in this game, coming off a bye week, new quarterback, Henry Columbia leading the team, looked good. But at the end of the day, like Jeremy said, defense won the game. Now, all the narratives are going to be about Columbia. Everything's going to be about, you know, the bye week and how they prepared, this, that, and the other. But defense did win the game. But we're not going to talk about defense just yet. We are going to talk about Henry Columbia and the rest of that offense. How did you think Columbia looked in his first game, Jeremy?
That is a great question. I think that Columbia looked good enough. Columbia to me is almost synonymous with no mistakes. It seems like every time that guy releases the ball, he knows where he's putting it, and his technique is great. He puts it where he's got to. He doesn't take a lot of risk. Even the one he took, I think it was in the third or the fourth, he had a pass downfield. Man, I can't even remember the receiver now, but even that as his most risky pass still hit the guy right in the hands. So I have a lot of confidence in Columbia to make the right passes, to be able to make reads, and then even more than that, understand that he can run, but that doesn't mean that he has to. So like even when he's starting to break out of the pocket to like see downfield, he's always making sure that there's not a guy wide open. And then when he's absolutely sure, then the guy picks up yards with his feet. And nothing too flashy either. I mean, just going straight downfield, making what he can, and going down easy. So it's just a lot of confidence for a quarterback position that for the better part of the season has been pretty up in the air.
All right, Dylan, what did you think from his first performance?
I think is, you know, his first start since his title game in high school, first start in 4 years. I had low expectations against a West Virginia defense that was supposed to be stout. But he blew away my expectations. I mean, 22 for 28, that's 78% completions with a 141 quarterback rating. Like, those are good numbers. Now, granted, he didn't put up, you know, the 400 yards a typical Texas Tech quarterback does, but he got us the dub, and that's what matters. And I think something else that's interesting about this game is we were out a lot of receivers in this game. No TJ Vasher, no Keshawn Carter, no Dalton Rigdon. So what's more interesting about this game is we got to see a total Matt Wells, David Yost recruited offense. You know, anybody who was there before didn't play. This is all their guys, and their guys got it done.
Do you really feel good about it, Matt Wells, David Yost offense? I do like what Jeremy said. Like, Henry Columbia did just enough, right? He was good enough. I do think, and this is going to be the comparison we're going to talk about for a little bit, would Alan Bowman have won this game? Honestly, I don't think he would have. Jeremy, do you think he would have?
No way.
Dylan, do you think he would have?
I tweeted this. He could not have handled that pass rush from West Virginia. He just couldn't have got away from it like Henry Columbia did.
I think that was his biggest strength. The O-line struggled in this game, but you would not know it if you looked at the box score. I think his biggest strength was, Henry Columbia's a one-read quarterback. He's going to see the first read, maybe the second read, and it's, okay, I got to pull this down and escape the rush. Now, we can argue that maybe he had to be a one-read quarterback because by the time he had that one read, the pocket collapsed. That could be the case, but he did pull the ball down, was already looking. I do agree with Jeremy to a little bit. He still was looking downfield a little, but for the most part, pulled it down and was ready to use his legs a little bit and gain back what would have been a sack. Alan Bowman in that same situation, he's just going to take the sack, right? And so it's Henry Columbia. I mean, on the game, Henry Columbia had to pull it down 11 times. He had 11 carries, and I'm pretty sure all 11, if not most of the 11, were from scrambles, right? So I think Henry Columbia did do just enough to move the sticks down the field, right? But Dylan, Columbia didn't do it all by himself. Who else on the offense was the star for you, the offensive player of the game?
Man, I don't know if he's necessarily the offensive player of the game, but who really impressed me was Taj Brooks. I mean, didn't expect to play much in this game and was inserted in the fourth quarter, and he helped us milk like 4.5 minutes off the clock so that we could go and get that dub. Like, they got just enough time off the clock because of Taj Brooks to get that win.
Yeah, and Taj Brooks was huge in this game because Sirajah Thompson went down. Xavier White went down. Sirajah Thompson went down. It was kind of just him left. I think at one point he was the only running back on the roster still left before having to go to one of the receivers to play running back.
Well, they forgot about Chucks. The announcers forgot about Chucks Nwabuko. But yeah, it really, at that point, even Matt Wells said this. Okay, they didn't want to play anyone else but Taj Brooks for that fourth quarter.
Let's be real, Dylan. Taj Brooks was the only one without left. Okay? Taj Brooks was it. All right? if Taj Brooks goes down, you mean to tell me they'd probably look at it and say, you know what? That Trey Cleveland really... Didn't he play running back in high school? You know, he ain't. Chucks would be in there. Hey, coach, I can go in. Like, hey,
Devin Smith.
Eazy-E, didn't you? You played receiver running back, right? You know. But anyways, Jeremy.
Where is Krishan Merriweather? Give him the ball.
Give him the ball. Jeremy, who'd you have as your offensive player of the game?
I love the Taj Brooks pick because Dylan's right. I mean, the guy stepped in when we needed him most and continued to be a veritable option at running back. And it wasn't just like, you know, a couple yards here, a couple yards there, but really got us first downs to help milk that clock, which was massive, especially when, you know, we have the PTSD this year of, you know, being up 15 points with 3 minutes left, and that doesn't mean anything. Like, you need all those seconds. But for me, I think Miles Price really showed out this game. He had a lot of fantastic catches and a lot of great vision in space and an ability to show that the boy is just quick and has good hands. And so that's really exciting for me to see him have such a good game when we did have a lot of stars out, but also having a lot of other good options in, like Polk and Ezukama, Kuntz getting a target. Miles Price did really good.
Well, since y'all took those two guys, I'm going to take Eazy-E. I'm going to go Eric Ezukama as my offensive player of the game. The main reason why is because he was a big safety blanket for Henry Columbia in the first half. He was the one that really built Henry Columbia's confidence early. That was what was needed for Columbia. He got a lot of really big catches early on, especially on third down, that really helped Columbia settle in. But I will ask y'all this question, though. Do y'all think we're hyping up the offense a little too much? Like, I'm worried to do this because, let's face it, only one touchdown scored by the offense in the entire second half, done early in the third quarter. This offense was shut down for most of that second half. Now, I'm not blaming Henry Columbia. I don't really blame anybody. Sorry, I don't really blame anybody, any player on this offense. I blame one person for the offensive struggles in the second half. David Yost's play calling was mind-numbing at times in the second half. A completely different person from the first half.
What was it, 3rd and 11, and he decided to go with a read option?
God,
it was like, horrible. What are we doing, coach?
In a tie game. In a tie game.
When we really needed a conversion, read option in 3rd and 11. Like, I don't know, maybe you're trying to trick them, but come on, coach. Like, the whole world saw that
that's
a garbage
like
play
NCAA
call.
That's like NCAA in your dorm BS. Yeah. Like, oh, he's not going to expect me. I see he's running the whatever. I'm going to try to do this play action pass or read. You know, what was the term you said?
Read option?
I don't know. Albie said that it was, his play calling was
pedestrian.
Pedestrian. We'll go with pedestrian. Mind-numbing. That was what it was. Mind-numbing. It was mind-numbing.
So, guys, let me tell y'all the last four drives of for the offense in the game. 3 plays punt, 6 plays punt, 3 plays punt, 8 plays punt. For a grand total of 54 yards and 4 drives. Tech does not win this game by the offense.
I would like to speak on this first, Dylan. I like this question because and if we are still asking, are we hyping up the offense too much? I don't think I'm not hyping up the offense. Let me be clear that when I say that Henry Columbia was good enough, I mean that this offense was good enough, that we are seeing first downs like we haven't seen since last year or even the, you know, the year before maybe. But staying on the field long enough, and I hate the end of the game. The end of the game was a much different play calling. I had much different play calling than the beginning of the game did. I don't know all the factors that contributed to that. I don't even want to try to diagnose that because Yost is in his own little world. But yeah, the last four drives suck. But what it does show me that, you know, we had playmakers and even with crappy play calling, because it's not just that one play call that was crappy. Most of it was pretty crappy at the end. Like, it's like, why are you calling this on this downage? Why are you doing it this on this downage? And we still had the players to get first downs. Like Brooks's, I think it was a third down and he runs, maybe it was a second, but he runs some large yardage to get the first and like to continue that drive. Gave our defense, and this is something I want to talk about at any point, is just like our defense. This is like the flip of having a really good offense, is that our defense is burnt, you know? But this year it's been that we have a really bad offense, so our defense is burnt. They're on the field way too much. Now we have this offense that is just good enough that's not going to like razzle-dazzle. Ooh, that's a wrong one for tonight. Razzy-dazzy for tonight. And they're not going to do that to you every single drive. They will have longer drives. They will have shorter drives. But they're going to take some time off the clock to give our defense the opportunity to rest. And I think that came in clutch. Even though none of those, although we should have had at least one of those drives as a touchdown, although none of those came to anything, our defense was well enough rested to make the stops so West Virginia didn't get anything. So I'm not upset. I'm upset with the play calling, but I'm not upset that of our style of offense. You know, like if we have the first, second, and third quarter, and West Virginia is a really good defense. You can't get around that. But if we have the first, second, and third quarter for the rest of the season, then I think we have a good enough offense and a good enough defense to get some good wins.
Dylan, what do you think?
But we're not like, I'm not hyping it up.
I was going to say, I don't think anyone here is going to try and hype up our offense. I think, you know, the moral of the story is we did just enough to get the job done. And that's not saying that the offense was great. And it really falls on David Yost in the second half, that play calling. You know how we give Gary Patterson crap for his prevent defense? It's almost like David Yost went into prevent offense in the second half, and it was not good and not fun to watch. But again, you know, Taj Brooks and a couple other guys, and then the scoop and score. We did enough to win the game, and that's all I really care about.
Yeah, I question if the offense, like, if it wasn't for not just the scoop and score, but also that McNamara punt that was like the greatest punt of all time. Thank you, Lubbock Wind, but also thank you,
the best punt in the history of college football. Let's be real.
The Irish Hammer.
Yeah, it was the Lubbock Wind plus Big Leg Mac equals the largest punt, longest punt any of us have ever seen. Right. It was amazing. It was all over Twitter for people didn't even care about the game outside of Lubbock and West Virginia. They only cared about the punt. But outside of those two plays, right, Tech probably loses this game. And so let's switch to the defensive side of the ball where we can talk about that incredible touchdown, fumble forced by your boy, Jacob Morgenstern, and recovered by my boy, Zach McPherson, and ran for a touchdown. Jacob Morgenstern, once again, getting in it. I have to take credit for all of his hard work because, of course, he heard me talk crap about him at the beginning of the year. And he has a dartboard with my face on it and decides to ball out every game since.
I think Papa Morgenstern is a listener of the podcast, and he's been relaying the messages to his son, Jacob.
I'm pretty positive.
Papa Morgenstern, I apologize 100%. I think we all do. Your son has been incredible the last few weeks. We love him.
No, I don't apologize. This is the fire that he needed to go right in there and have the year he's having. He's having an incredible year, and that actually, I think, just topped that off. But who was your player of the game, Dylan, on the defensive side of the ball?
I'm going to cheat and not give you a player and just answer grad transfer linebackers.
Okay.
Because Krishan Merriweather was great. Colin Schooler was what we expected him to be, finally. Colin Schooler looked really well. And then Jacob Morgenstern, with Colin Schooler a little bit, forced that fumble for the scoop and score and what ended up being the winning play of the game. So I'm cheating, but our linebackers were everywhere. I mean, they both had 9 tackles apiece, and then Jacob Morgenstern had 3 and a tackle for loss.
You definitely pulled a Jeremy. But Jeremy, are you going to pull a Jeremy again and also pick multiple people?
No, it's Rico Jeffers for me. Oh, man, this guy who has worked hard for the past couple of years to be the lead guy on defense, he showed out this game. He had a lot of smart plays. He made multiple tackles in the backfield. He made his presence known. Loved it. Loved the fire. Loved the action. And I think Rico Jeffers' performance, Dylan, is what spurned on Schooler and Merriweather's ability to play better. He's a real captain out there.
When he's wrecking havoc in the backfield.
Yeah, I think Rico and Schooler's best games of the year. I think both of them played absolutely. Schooler was everywhere. I saw Schooler consistently. Even if he wasn't making the tackle, he was right by the tackle. He was everywhere.
Dude, he was pancaking people left and right.
Yeah, Schooler was amazing. And then Rico, too. Rico consistently was in the back. It was like a tandem, the two of them. Rico was consistently in the backfield while Schooler was consistently right by the play. And if Schooler or Rico wasn't there, then Krishan Merriweather was somewhere on the other side. It was crazy by those three. So I'm not going to pick those guys because y'all have basically taken all that up. The lazy thing for me to do would be to say, oh, the guy that scored the game-winning touchdown, Zach McPherson, the guy that I predicted would be the X-Factor in this game. That'd be the lazy thing to do, to talk about how, oh, Albie's always right, and he picked the guy that was going to do the amazing thing. No. I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to pick DeMarcus Fields as my defensive player of the game.
Uh-huh. Good pick.
I'll pick Dylan's boy because DeMarcus Fields was our best player in the secondary. He was another guy that was all over the place. Not only was he big and helping with run defense on Letty Brown, sorry, who was really good for West Virginia, but he was also really good in the secondary, like just pass defense, right? The receivers for West Virginia outside of Winston Wright Jr., didn't really get much going. For Dylan, you brought up Sam James in the game. Sam James struggled in this game. And that's
I was worried. I didn't think anyone was going to cover him. And then, DeMarcus Fields really stepped up.
Yeah, Sam James really struggled in this game. Winston Wright Jr. did not struggle in this game. Him and Letty Brown were killing us through the game. But Letty Brown, I think, was killing us in the passing game. not necessarily in the running game. I mean, I think they really did a decent job of bottling Letty Brown up. I think that's one of the reasons why the defense was able to have success, because the West Virginia running game wasn't able to get going like they usually do.
Can we also get some kudos to the high motor Eli Howard for just working his way around the line all game long to finally get that satisfying sack at the end?
Okay.
The guy works hard. Oh, and he ran down Letty Brown. Yeah. Yeah. He's a hard worker, man. He saved us a couple of chunk plays.
I mean, all around effort. Everyone on the defense gave 100% effort in that game.
Yeah, I mean, the defense played really well. The only thing I'll say is this. I think the defensive players played a really good game. I think they're the ones that won the game, in my opinion. They made the game-winning play, obviously, in the fourth quarter there, and did a really good job. He held West Virginia to 27 points. Jared Daigie, I know this was a very emotional game for Jared Daigie. He was slanging that thing, and the Daigie to Wright connection was potent throughout the game. The Daigie to Brown connection was potent. I will say this, though. Keith Patterson's play calling, again, was just as bad as David Yost, if you ask me. Second half, a lot of three guys rushing, told it to allow Letty, and the secondary actually did a decent job of covering, right? Especially in the second half, the decent job of covering. But when you cover for 6 seconds, 6, 7, 8 seconds, eventually somebody's going to get open. And usually it was Letty Brown that was able to trail out, get open. A lot of the times you had Krishan Merriweather, who is as good as he is, he's our worst coverage linebacker, that's all right there sitting, waiting for your most talented West Virginia's most talented offensive player, Letty Brown, to cut right across him. He's not going to be able to cover that. Like, there were so many disappointing calls. Why do we have a QB spy against Jared Daigie? That doesn't make any sense. That simply does not make any sense to have a QB spy against Jared Daigie when you have three guys rushing. A couple plays, we had two guys rushing with two guys sitting back just in case. It just didn't make any sense, especially towards the game. I was worried if it wasn't for that Zach McPherson touchdown, we were going to lose the game, because eventually West Virginia was going to just nickel and dime us down the field.
You know, I have a really fun fact for you guys. Did you know Jared Daigie grew up in Lubbock, Texas?
Oh, wow.
I was not familiar with that.
Wow.
That's the first time I've heard that.
I dug deep for that.
That's
fact,
a fact,
guys.
I didn't know that, but I do have another weird fact. I didn't know about him being from Lubbock. That's crazy. That's crazy. You would think he might have went to like Friendship or something. That's crazy. But did you know that his older brother went to Texas Tech?
Who is that?
A guy by the name of Seth Daigie. I don't know. Maybe he was. Was he a?
Was that the Teach Me How to Daigie dude?
It might have been. Oh. I think he was a equipment manager. I think he was an equipment manager. He made the song. It was weird. There was a lot of weird flashbacks to him, like in some video game, I guess, beating Oklahoma in Norman. Like, that could happen, right?
I thought that sounded familiar.
I had to get that out of my system.
Wait, why didn't Texas Tech recruit this guy?
Because he sucks.
No. Time out. I will say this. All right, so for people that don't understand the sarcasm we're laying here, that's all that ESPN wanted to talk about for 3 hours, was the fact that Jared Daigie was said that he's little brother and he's from Lubbock and Tech refused to recruit him. I will say this. This is what I will say. Jared Daigie didn't – he wasn't a decent quarterback at Friendship. Wasn't as good as I won't say he wasn't as good as Seth, because Seth didn't play. If you remember, he was hurt the whole time he was at Friendship. But Jared Daigie was a decent quarterback at Friendship. He was a 3-star QB. Wasn't great, but he was, in my opinion, he was good enough for a nepotism scholarship, right? Everybody.
Nepotism scholarship.
They give out nepotism scholarships like candy at every university. I thought he was good enough for a nepotism scholarship, but he didn't get it. Kingsbury,
however,
didn't think he was good enough.
The only scholarship offer he had was Bowling Green, and that's only because their coaches had Texas Tech ties.
At the same time, Jared Daigie would have gotten other scholarships if it wasn't for that. Because if him not getting a Tech scholarship, it was known that he was going to go to Bowling Green because his brother, I believe his brother was there at the time. But that was, like, it was a known thing that he was going to go to Bowling Green. So nobody offered him a scholarship because there was no point. So I won't say that he just went to Bowling Green because that's the only scholarship he could get. Could have got other ones. It's just, if you're, I don't know, Kentucky, you're not going to give Jared Daigie a scholarship when you know he's not going to take it.
But right? The fact that they tried to sell it, that it was criminal, that we didn't give him an offer, is ridiculous.
Baker level narrative.
Yeah. I'll say this. I think Jared Daigie was a better high school quarterback than Baker Mayfield.
Whoa.
Ooh.
Yeah. Hot take.
Yeah, I'll say that. I'll say that. No, I won't go any further than that. That's about as far as my anti-Baker rhetoric will get. But I won't go as far as that. But to bring it on back to the game, to the Tech West Virginia game, I do worry about Keith Patterson's. I worry about both coordinators' play calling. Like, just period. I think that's. I mean, now we're. This is really the third game of the year that we. Luckily, we won this game. This is the third game of the year where I'm once again sitting back like, man, David Yost and Keith Patterson, what are y'all doing?
I think for me, the Yost is a lot more obvious than the Patterson. And maybe a part of that is we might have got lucky with a number of plays. Like maybe Dagey just made a bad choice, or the running back just, you know, happened to run into one of our three stellar linebackers or whatever. I'm just having a hard time coming around to believing that Patterson doesn't have some kind of plan here. Whereas Yost, it's like, I don't know what you're doing, dude. I have no idea. I hated the idea of a three-man front rushing in this league. But against Texas, Texas did have no problem marching down the field on the last drive. So there may be something to be said about it.
Last three drives. We are contractually obligated to mention 3 minutes and 13 seconds on every single podcast.
I'm about to get it tattooed on my body. So I don't know if I hate it just yet, because I do believe in our athletes. Now, who would you put at the four spot, and what would you so we're just going to get rid of the
Get rid of it. I'm saying that when you have a three-man front, teams with three-man fronts, they throw a fourth one in. A good example is that you wouldn't know it, but my NFL team, the Houston Texans, have a three-man front, and they consistently rush four or five. That's just an unknown thing. You have three guys rushing, and you either have a blitzing linebacker that might as well be a fourth DN, or you have a middle. That gives you the luxury to blitz from anywhere. Anybody can come in, whether it's Merriweather, Jeffers, Schooler, DeMarcus Fields from the safety spot. Anybody can come in. Sometimes you blitz, have four guys rushing. Sometimes you have five. Sometimes you have six. But you don't have and sometimes you only put three, right? I'm not saying you can never put three, but I'm saying to consistently only have three rushers, it makes it to where Jared Dagey can just sit back in the pocket and sling it from wherever he wants. Now, luckily for us, Dagey made some mistakes in the passing game. And luckily for us, the defense came up big. But it's a big reason why when we had that prevent defense against Texas, we lost at the end. Big reason why Kansas State, he actually started blitzing in the first half and it was working. And then he laid off of it, and we lost that game against Kansas State. It was I think it's important for this team to, you can't just always have three guys rushing, especially when it's winning time. That's the main part time of the game where you should be blitz, where you should throw up packages, where you should have pressure on Dagey, especially when you have.
So what you're advocating? So what you're advocating for?
I've been talking for like 20 minutes.
Maybe not a three-man front. Wait, no, sorry. All right, go ahead, Dylan.
Started.
Okay, fair enough. Wait 20 more minutes. Let's be clear, what we're advocating for here, what you're advocating for is not necessarily making it a four-man front, a static four-man front, but to dial up more blitzes.
Dial up more blitzes, and who should be coming is Rico Jeffers. I mean, let's be honest. The dude lives in the backfield. When you give him the opportunity, he's there. So I'm with Albie. Don't screw up the scheme, but you just have to bring more than three on occasion just to keep people honest, just to mix things up a bit. And you have people like Rico Jeffers who live in the backfield.
Yeah, you like have that. The
certainly
tools.
More blitzes in the fourth, especially.
You have the tools at your disposal. You got to use them. You got to put pressure on Jared Dagey. It has to come from somewhere. And I think that's a, like I said, if it's not for that fumble return, there's zero. I have no confidence in this team winning this game if it's not for that touchdown by Zach McPherson. Like, no confidence. And it has less to do with the players and much more to do with, I have no confidence in David Yost dialing up the plays to win the game on the offensive side of the ball. And I have no confidence in Keith Patterson from the defense in a good enough position to win the game when you're only rushing three people. Like, that's just, next week we play Oklahoma, and those two leading the charge, I don't see how we beat Oklahoma. But that's another conversation for another day. With this pod getting long, let's do a quick recap of the Big 12 games because the Big 12 had a lot of crazy games this week. Let's start off with the fiercest rivalry that anyone has seen. The Sunshine State Showdown, Kansas at Kansas State. Did any of y'all watch this game? I hope not. Kansas State won 55-14. It was embarrassing. It was bad. So on to better games.
Hey,
what's that?
Okay.
No, what's that?
Well, I did see that Les Miles was quoted in the presser saying that he wanted one or two of Kansas's punts to go out of bounds. So I'm assuming that maybe Kansas State had some kind of special teams play.
Oh,
and that was Les's.
They had every punt return was incredible for Kansas State.
And so okay, so they were like, you know what? That's why we lost the game.
No.
That was the Jeremy. That was the, what is it, 40-point difference.
Yeah, Jeremy, they lost 55-14.
I know. It's asinine that's what he focused on.
Yeah, no, so Kansas State did score two punt returns for touchdowns. Phillip Brooks is a beast, but it's Kansas, guys. Let's be real. So on to better games from the week. Oklahoma beat TCU 33-14 just when people actually thought TCU was going to be good this year. Don't know why they thought that. But Oklahoma let everybody know, no, they're still TCU.
Yeah, I don't know why I picked TCU in this game, to be totally honest. I don't know what Kool-Aid I was drinking that morning, but Spencer Rattler looked
Max
good.
Max Duggan is the problem.
No, Max Duggan is not the problem. The offensive line is the problem. Max Duggan has 3 or 4 seconds to throw every time he drops back. Max. Mm. Duggan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Max is, he's all right. I have nothing else to say about him or the TCU Horned Frogs. They can eat me as far as I'm concerned. Anyways, next game. What's that?
I was just going to say to Dylan's point, I think Rattler is just kind of getting the, I have stars around me. Like Mims had so many yards in that game.
Well, only four catches too.
Yeah. I'm like, Rattler's just doing the thing where he dumps it off to somebody who's amazing. What we call it, the Drew Brees effect.
No, I call it the Baker Mayfield sophomore year effect. All right,
okay.
That was the year.
Let's
that,
just dump it off to somebody who's good. They're going to take it 60 yards. Sounds
yeah,
like
no,
stats look pretty awesome.
Baker, his sophomore year, when everybody was infatuated with him, he really wasn't great. His role at the time was just get it to your stars, and what happens with that is, and what's scary about Spencer Rattler is that usually when you learn this to get it to your stars, you get better eventually. Right, that's what happened with Russell Wilson in the NFL. That's what happened with Dak in the NFL. That's what happened with Tom Brady. Right, you have stars around you. You get it to your stars as you get better as a quarterback, and eventually you become the stud that you are. Hence Baker Mayfield his senior year. And that's what's scary about Spencer Rattler.
Compare my quarterback Dak Prescott to Baker Mayfield. Thank you.
Well, I mean that's Baker in college. That's a hell of a comparison. You would pray Dak gets to how Baker was his senior year in college. The dude won a Heisman. Next game, Baylor took an L against Texas. This Baylor team don't look too good.
Baylor was so demoralized by this loss that their starting two running backs quit the rest of the season after this game.
Wow, are you
they
serious?
Took that free year.
They both took off the rest of the season right after this game. Nah, I'm good, coach.
Man, I feel for this Baylor team, man. They have games canceled. They've had to put off practices. Like this is a squad of a bunch of people who've never really played together, and it shows, man. They're just not synced up. Brewer is Brewer, but like outside of him, you know, there's not really much going on for Baylor. So I feel bad for him.
You know what it is?
It's saying Texas did well.
They're back to being swaggerless. They're back to those ugly green and yellow jerseys. They no longer do the, you know, we know when back in the day, years ago, Baylor kind of had some swag to them. I was a little jealous, I'm not going to lie. They had some swag to them. Their jerseys looked nice. They had creative plays. Even in the Rule era, at least the defense had a little swagger to them. This team, this green and yellow team, the swag's gone. We're back to the Baylor we know.
It's because Dave Aranda refuses to wear a sweater vest.
That's possible. Or
typical Matt Rule fashion.
Vest, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is.
How's that guy doing?
The swag's gone. Also, the game, we said this would be outside of the West Virginia-Texas Tech game. We said this would be the biggest game in the Big 12, and it lived up to the billing. 17th-ranked Iowa State, 6th-ranked Oklahoma State. I hope both of you watched it because it was a great game. Oklahoma State wins on a game-winning field goal, 24-21. What'd y'all think of the game, Jeremy?
This was slow punch-for-punch football. Despite Spencer Sanders, who is getting better than he was last year, and then Brock Purdy, who is Brock Purdy in October, first of all, not playing up to the not the Brocktober we're used to from Iowa State, but this was a fascinating game because I was convinced that Iowa State was going to come in and put Oklahoma State in their place, just because I had not really a lot of I didn't have a lot of confidence in Sanders. But then I forgot, oh yeah, Chuba Hubbard is an absolute machine. And once I saw him break away that like six missed tackle play for a touchdown, I was like, you know what? I don't think that Iowa State's going to win this one. And they did not. They just couldn't catch up in the fourth.
Yeah, I think the big takeaways from this game is Spencer Sanders is healthy, and that's trouble for the Big 12. But most importantly, this Oklahoma State defense is legit. I mean, causing pressures, getting in the backfield all the time. And then I really feel for Breece Hall because he had an incredible game and doesn't come out with the win.
I was about to say, Breece Hall didn't make it seem like they were legit. Breece Hall balled. Now, they were legit against everybody else, not named Breece Hall. But Breece Hall himself balled out. To me, this was a battle of two semi-inept two good quarterbacks that struggled. And their running back teammates that balled, right? Like Breece Hall and Chuba Hubbard, they were like, hey, Sanders, Purdy, y'all sit back. We got this. And it was a battle between the two of them. Both of them are amazing. Both of them will probably be the first and second person picked in the draft, like, or running back picked in the draft. Both, like, they both had games where Purdy Sanders, which was what me and Dylan talked about, the kind of the matchup between the two of them. Sanders did play a better game, but he had two picks. Right? He had two picks himself.
Yeah, bad Purdy, choices.
Purdy did what he's been doing all year, where he tries to kind of put the team on his back to negative results, and it didn't really look good. He didn't look good anytime the ball – if the ball wasn't in Breece Hall's hands, the play usually didn't look that great, right? So it was tough, but really good game. You could argue maybe even the game of the year in the Big 12 so far. But Oklahoma State, still undefeated. Right now, Oklahoma State is literally the Big 12's only chance at the playoff. So we know that
playoffs.
People up top are rooting for them to win every game from here on. Because that's it. And unfortunately, Spencer Sanders, though, is going to be in the league for a few more years, and I'm not too happy about it. So this is it. Pod's running a little long, so we got to get out of here, folks. Last thing you want to say, Jeremy?
Bye.
Okay. Last thing that you want to say, Dylan.
Game ball. Special teams game ball goes to the Irish Hammer, Austin McNamara.
Hell yeah.
For the brand.
Okay, when you keep saying, you say Irish Hammer, Jeremy said he wants to get a fill on Dylan. This is supposed to be a PG-rated podcast.
Okay? I gotta rate this as explicit, don't I?
Yeah, I mean, come on now. This is, you know, hey, hide your children before listening to this podcast. These little, you know, these two sexual beings over here. For me, I think that it was great. Good win. Finally get a win, a conference win in this game. So definitely tough to be happy. I still don't think this is something to get your hopes up. I think for me, I do feel better about the team with Henry Columbia at the board, because he does what Alan Bowman refused to, which is moves the sticks, right? He says, I just need to get first downs. He does it with his legs, or he does it with a good pass. The two best throws of the game, he had a great throw on what was 4th and 11 on a questionable decision to go for it. And it's arguably his best throw of the game, right in the money. And that's what we need from a guy that's just going to get the first down. So a Columbia at least makes me feel a little bit better. Yost and Patterson, I have a lot of questions about them. I don't know if they're really the guys. But at 2-3, Tech is in a position to get their season back. And a huge upset next week at home against Oklahoma will put us right back to where we needed to be. So who knows? Maybe this team can come back.
Before we get out of here, you never know. Let me get one more thing in before we get out of here. Let's just talk about Matt Wells recruiting. We just landed Cam Valdez. big time recruit for Texas Tech. And then just something to talk about the depth of this team. It's the depth is being filled out by Matt Wells, and we saw that depth pay off on Saturday.
Oh, I didn't know Dylan was Matt Wells' hive. Look at that.
As you a coach? As a recruiter?
Matt Wells, you've got a fan in Dylan Smythe. So you can come back, listen to the pod again. Somebody here likes you. So there you go. Hey, we're across the spectrum here on the Air Raid Podcast. So thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all our socials at Air Raid Podcast. And as always, you've been listening to the Air Raid Podcast, Ben and Vivi the Matadors. As always, stay wrecked, people.